Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7 and Episode 82. And on the back 20 minutes of the podcast, Dave had a conversation with Joel Corey. Dave, it's NFL agent. How do we describe Joel? I mean, what's...
Yeah, Joel Corey, former NFL agent, and he currently writes, you know, almost specifically for CBSSports.com. So, you know me and him, it's going to be a lot of math and a lot of good math, though. We talk heavily about Le'Veon Bell and his situation ahead of him potentially receiving the franchise tag. And we also toss around a few Antonio Brown contract numbers at the end of the interview as well, too. So if you like math, if you like talking contracts, make sure to stay tuned for that.
All right. So, Dave, I know you and Alex on Friday hit on Kevin Colbert, who I guess on Thursday met with some reporters. And, you know, I don't know that anything in that was surprising from my perspective in terms of what Kevin said. I guess, I guess the way that I would say it is he was very clear about some things. And, you know, he made it abundantly clear that Antonio Brown is the number one priority. Antonio Brown's going to get it re-signed. And it's just a question of, you know, what the numbers are. And I haven't heard what you've said, but I was on Sports Showdown last night, and I talked about it on my show this week. The numbers I'm thinking about, and again, it's the guaranteed money that's important. Everybody kind of knows this by now, are, you know, a 5-year, $75 to $80 million deal with $35 to $40 million being guaranteed. I mean, is that in the ballpark of what you're thinking about?
Well, I think he's going to be the highest paid wide receiver, you know, when you break down the new money. Average. I mean, I think there's no way around that. Joel and I kind of talk about that at the end of the interview as well, too. Talking to Joel, we could see him getting $20 million signing bonus in this thing. So $20 million, it'll be interesting to see whether or not they decide to. I wouldn't. If you give him a $20 million signing bonus, I kind of wonder if you're going to keep his currently scheduled base salary at what it current, you know, at what it is now, which is what, 4.4
million? Yeah, 4.3 or something.
4.7. Well, I forget the exact number right off the top of my head, because you got a lot of previous amortization of signing bonus money that's not going anywhere, and you probably want to keep his cap hit as close as you possibly can to what it is right now. So, you know, I think you could see him get, you know, $22 million right around in there, in, you know, at signing, and then, you know, you just go from there. Now, obviously, he's probably going to have a few option bonuses in year number two and number three. But this thing should come together. It's not like this is a surprise to the Steelers. I don't think there's any way around them not paying him more than AJ Green type money either. So I think, you know, I think this will come together before the NFL draft. And if I had to guess right now, it'd be something like, you know, $21, $22 million in year one. And by year two, you know, at the end of the second year of the contract, potentially what?
35, 40 million, right?
Yeah, somewhere in between there.
So what do you think? How much is guaranteed? What's your number? Above or below, above 40 million?
Well, it depends. Are you talking injury skill, or are you talking fully guaranteed?
Fully guaranteed.
I think $22 million or so.
So you don't think you don't think they'll guarantee, you know, the first 2 years of the contract?
They don't like to do that, you know. They don't.
I'll be surprised if the guarantee isn't in. They don't get. I just see it as a zero risk type of thing on the first 2 years. as you say, keep the first year low and then the second year, whatever, it's, you know, 15, 16 million. So 35, 40 million. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. The other thing.
Now, real quick, they'll probably frame this thing when it is initially reported as being, you know, close to 40 million. Guaranteed because it's the skill and injury guarantees along with that. Now, for all practical purposes, now the first 2 years of that thing is going to be guaranteed. So,
right.
You know, read into it. However, how the initial language is presented versus what actually is truly guaranteed might be two different things. But for all practical purposes, first 2 years of this thing will be guaranteed.
Okay, so then we know that Le'Veon Bell is going to get franchised, and we'll see. You know, we'll just see if by July 15th they get something done in terms of getting a deal done. So that's a done deal as well. So all the conversations we had, you know, in the off season, you know, 6 months ago, 12 months ago, about AB, about Le'Veon Bell, about Ryan Shazier. I mean, pretty straightforward stuff. The Steelers are going to keep their best players. That's done. The second most interesting thing that came out of it, Dave, for me at least, was that Kevin Colbert did not as strongly suggest that they were going to draft a quarterback. I mean, he just certainly didn't dismiss the idea of drafting a quarterback. He didn't guarantee that Landry Jones would be back with Timmons and Jones. He said basically the same type of thing. We'll see. You know, we've got to come to, you know, common agreement. You know, they may get a chance to test free agency. So, you know, the door's open for both those guys to be back. But versus what Art said and what Kevin said, I don't know that I feel like if I had to bet on whether they were going to draft a quarterback now, I'd put it at 50-50. Well, after when Art spoke, I might have put it at 70-30.
Yeah, you know, Kevin Colbert did leave you to kind of question what Art Rooney had put out there. But even so, I mean, you know, you go through the draft picks that the team – why – if you're going to spend one, Alex and I talked about this the other day, spend one in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, you know? And I, after I digested all this and since talking to Alex and kind of rehashing what Kevin Colbert said, I can still see them drafting a quarterback, but I can't see it happening in the first four rounds. And I'll be quite upset if that happens.
Yeah, we're on the same page. I mean, I've said, you know, re-sign Landry and don't draft a quarterback. But yeah, if you draft one in the last round or two, I guess I can live with that side of things.
And you can do both those things. You can both re-sign Landry and you can still draft a quarterback. And that not be wrong depending on when you get that quarterback. I'm leaning a little more percentage chances than I was several weeks ago on the chances of re-signing Jones, but not much more. I think the Steelers are saying all the right things when it comes to Jones. Something tells me another team might be willing to throw a little bit more money at him, but we'll see soon.
Let me see if there was anything else that jumped out. I mean,
Cinquez Golson, what did you think about his Golson?
I guess they're kind of as expected. As you would say, you know, now it's been 2 years, so we're less certain that he's the guy that we drafted. And obviously, Kevin emphasized that. He talked about skilled position or defensive players. I mean, for anybody, a foot injury is a big deal. You know, maybe if you're an offensive lineman, it's less of a big deal. But you get a foot injury, it's a big deal. But I don't see why he shouldn't be able to return like anybody else from a foot injury. It's just you're two years away from the guy you drafted, so the risk is, you know, incrementally larger. And I didn't find it surprising.
Here's the thing that got me when he was asked, help me out here. I think he was asked something to the degree, does he know any players that have missed the first 2 years and returned? Or do you remember how that question was posed to him? And he said, I'm sure there has been. Well, the more I thought about it, it was – Yeah, Kevin knows exactly one player that's done that. Remember, Sean Spence missed his first two seasons, and then he was ultimately able to return in his third and fourth seasons. And although, you know, not a every down starter, he did start quite a few games. For the Steelers, and of course went on to sign with the Tennessee Titans for during last year. So outside of Sean Spence, though, can you, and I've racked my brain and tried to research this the best I can, do you remember any players drafted in recent history that sat out their first two seasons and without playing a down to only to return and play, you know, later?
Not off the top of my head. Nobody comes to mind. I mean, Spence is a good example, and his injury was much more dramatic, and it was a singular injury for him that kept him out 2 years, which for Golson, obviously, it's two different things with the shoulder and the foot. So, I don't have one.
Let me throw that out to our listeners to help me out here, if they remember, and they can email me theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. I'm looking for players who were drafted and missed their first two seasons after being drafted, only to return for, say, a third or fourth year. I racked my brain, and outside of Sean Spence, I couldn't come up with an example.
I guess the other notable thing was, and maybe I missed it because I didn't see everything that was written about what Kevin said, but I didn't see him talk about D'Angelo Williams at all. Did you see anything on that front?
No, I didn't see anything on D'Angelo Williams whatsoever, nor did it, you know, even though we all kind of assume what's going to happen with James Harrison's going to be re-signed. I don't think I remember anything being said about him either.
So if it, after Kevin speaking, I'll stick to what I, or maybe I didn't say this on the podcast last week. My top three rounds for the Steelers in the draft in some order are outside linebacker, cornerback, and running back.
Yeah, that's fair. I think, believe it or not, I think I asked Alex to answer that same question on Friday as well too. So it's good that you follow course with that. Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. We all know edge rusher is going to be in the first two rounds, right? I mean, how shocked would we be if it's not? Now the only question becomes, you know, how far up? You know, Jerry Dulac was pretty emphatic. In some recent chats of his, that he didn't think cornerback was that big of a need. But, you know, he, of course, wrote all that before Kevin Colbert spoke. And Kevin Colbert, in no way, shape, or form, ruled out the possibility that you know, if a nice cornerback is there, that they would certainly entertain the idea that then running back, depending on, you know, what happens with even not depending on what happens with D'Angelo Williams, you could re-sign D'Angelo Williams for a 1 year deal, and you could still take a running back because of all the uncertainty, not only past 2017, but, you know, in 2017 as well too. I mean, they have re-signed Fitzgerald Toussaint to an exclusive rights contract, and obviously Carlos Williams is under contract as well too. But there's a lot of uncertainty moving past 2017 when you get past starter Le'Veon Bell. So it would make sense that within the first three or four rounds that they might address the running back position.
Yeah, so I've kind of done a complete 180 on my view of the cornerback position, because, you know, I assume Justin Gilbert was in their plans and probably thought that with that and Cinquez Golson that they were in good shape. And now, kind of with Gilbert not in their plans, Will Gay being, you know, to me, it's you still go back to these three kind of veteran guys under contract. And I think I said for sure one of them wouldn't make the final 53 in terms of Will Gay, Arthur Motes, and who was the third one? There was another guy in that group, but I guess if I were making the 53 man roster right now and putting five draft picks or five or six rookies on it, I'd probably put Will Gay on it. But I don't think he's more than 50-50 to make the final roster.
Man, as I sit here right now, I'll be shocked if William Gay's not on the final 53. And regardless of what the Steelers do in the draft, on top of it, I don't see how you know, at his price tag, he's cheap, experience. He can even still play special teams for you if you needed that to happen, for him to earn a roster spot. So I'll be surprised if Gay's not on the 53 as we sit here in February. Let me ask you this. Greg Rosenthal of NFL.com threw out one player or his predictions for one player each of the 16 teams should sign. And he has the Steelers signing Prince Amukamara. Is that something you'd remotely considering? And it's obviously would come down to price, but Amukamara earned $5.5 million with the Jaguars last year. His worth, in my opinion, is obviously lower than that now. So let's say you could get him on a 3-year, $8 million contract. Is that something you'd remotely consider?
Well, when I think about the five corners who are going to be on the team next year, you've got the two guys who started this year. I'm going to assume Senquez Golson gets an opportunity and is healthy. That's three. If they draft one in the first four rounds, I'll assume he'll make the team. That's four. So now then you're looking at Will Gay. You're looking at Al Shabazz. I mean, I don't really see them signing a corner, because what are you signing that corner to be? Because, you know, Golson and Gay, I know Golson has played largely outside, but there's a perception that he can play in the slot. So Golson and Gay, we look at them as both capable in the slot. So are you signing them to be your third or fourth corner? I wouldn't do it.
You would have to, if you're going to spend that kind of money on Prince Amukamara, or the kind of money that it would probably take to sign him, you'd almost have to do it for him to challenge heavily to start. And that means challenging Ross Cockrell, you know. And let me ask you this. Is Prince Amukamara an upgrade over Ross Cockrell?
Yeah, I haven't watched enough of him to know, but I how old is he now? 28, 29?
I think he's what, 28, right? He is 27. He'll be 28 in June.
Yeah, so his age 28 season. I'd stick with what I know in terms of Ross Cockrell versus Amukamara. So yeah, I don't love it. I don't love it. Some of that would depend. And if they – yeah, no, I don't see it.
Yeah, and let's remember, Amukamara, the knock on him his whole entire career is he's missed games. He missed two more last year, albeit at the start of the season due to a hamstring injury. The fact that he played 14 games in a row, I think it was, or 13 games in a row after missing two of the first three, is probably pretty incredible in and of itself. But with that said, he had no interceptions last year. First time during his career he's finished a season without just one interception. You know, I still have to think his market value is going to be around $3 million a season as it stands. Now, if the Steelers could get him cheaper than that, I'd probably nod my head yes. But all in all, I mean, let's face it. Do we even expect the Steelers to sign any free agents during this offseason that would earn an average?
Not a starter. I don't think a starter.
Yeah, and any that would earn an average of over $3 million. You know, they just it doesn't smell that way. And I thought it was even more peculiar that Pro Football Focus, writing for ESPN.com earlier this week in the Insider Edition, had the Steelers going after Pierre Garçon.
Yeah, I saw you write about that, and I feel Pierre Garçon's a good receiver, and he will fit with just about any team. So it's not an outrageous idea. For the Steelers, wide receiver, are they going to go there in a draft? It's a reasonable draft class at wide receiver. It always is, it seems, these days. And you know, the idea, if you feel like you need to add a guy, I'm with you. I would look at Marcus Wheaton. and say, you know, does a 1 year, $2 million deal get done? You know, what's a good, what's the, I think Marcus Wheaton has some value. I don't think he is valueless coming off of, you know, a four catch season where he missed virtually all of it. So, you know, if you had to sign somebody at a, out of the bargain bin, I'd stay, again, I'd stay home and look there first.
Yeah, I agree, and wrote as much in that piece saying, look, I mean, if you're going to and plus, well, I mean, what he, Pierre Garçon's going to still command what, $6 million a season at least?
Yeah, he's a good receiver. Yeah, that's real money.
I mean, you could probably get Marcus Wheaton for two or three, maybe. The only question now is does Marcus Wheaton just really want? I just, my biggest concern with Marcus Wheaton is he has more value outside of Pittsburgh than he does in Pittsburgh for some reason. You kind of wonder if he can become that next Emmanuel Sanders. Well, you know, would playing in a more rigid offensive system help him more? You know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
But you know, look, I wouldn't be opposed if they got, Marcus Wheaton back on a cheap, on a 1 year deal. It would definitely keep you from having to spend a draft pick on a wide receiver this year. That's for sure.
Yeah. That'll be interesting to see, you know, how they view their wide receiver depth, and what they put together, because, Sammy Coates, I guess, was, you know, Dale Lawley tweeted that he saw Sammy Coates' fingers this week when they were doing a show at the auto show. And he said, you know, they look like an offensive lineman's hands, which is not good. Now, I don't want to make too much of that, because you learn to live with your hands the way they are. And if your job's to catch a football, you figure out how to catch a football. But Sammy Coates is I feel like Sammy Coates is as big a wild card, if not a bigger wild card, than Martavis Bryant coming into the next season. I don't have any idea what to expect from him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. And Marcus Wheaton went through a similar busted up finger, didn't he? And a couple years ago. And that thing was a mangled mess, too. What is it about these Steelers receivers can't keep their fingers out of the fan for some reason? But, yeah, I mean, it's a huge question mark, and we've talked several times about him. Even good fingers and all, he's still a one-trick pony right now, right? So
yeah, no, you know, they let him run in patterns in the middle of the field in the Miami game, and they got two interceptions thrown, and they let him, you know, maybe the last game of the season, I guess he ran a couple, but you know, if I would love to see a graphic of every pattern that Sammy Coates ran this year, and see, you know, how many of them were, you know, what the route tree looked like, because I don't think he's running anything sophisticated.
Yeah, I like the old Bill Cosby stand up. You go deep.
Yeah, that's pretty much. That's it. So I don't know. You know, they look at the receiver position. Is it a position of need? I mean, I don't. Kevin didn't comment on Martavis Bryant, and for obvious reasons. And, you know, you'd like to, from the limited articles we've seen, you'd like to think that he's got it. I will say he was very complimentary of Le'Veon Bell in terms of his attitude off the field. And I feel that way. I don't think the Steelers have any risk with Le'Veon Bell and drug policy. And so, I mean, I would be beyond blown away if the Steelers ran into an issue with Le'Veon Bell. So I wasn't surprised that Kevin said the things he said. But with Martavis Bryant, who knows?
Are you drafting a wide receiver in the first? Well, you already picked up. You already picked us. Your.
Yeah, I'm not, and I'm probably, if I like DeMarcus Ayers, and you know, I don't know how much of a twin DeMarcus Ayers is to Eli Rogers. I see a lot of similarities there. So, you know, if you draft, I'd be more inclined to take a tight end than a wide receiver. Let's put it that way.
I could see them doing a six-round wide receiver, maybe one with
a some big guy.
Yeah, one with some length. And now, obviously, you're probably not going to get the fastest.
Weegee Thompson.
Yeah, the fastest of Jack Rabbits that late in the draft, you know. But maybe get somebody, you know, a Justin Brown, you know, type of player, somebody to bring into camp. Now, remember, they still got and nobody, even though we have his college film, nobody knows what this kid is or isn't right now. Kanan Severn, you know, is going to be competing for a roster spot. Marcus Tucker is going to be competing for a roster spot again this year during the offseason. Look, as bad as mangled fingers as Sammy Coates may or may not have, it's hard to imagine that he's going anywhere. Darius Hayward Bay, sure, he's not. Darius Hayward Bay is more special teams than he is wide receiver, but it's hard to imagine as we sit here right now, him not making the roster. Eli Rogers goes without saying he'll make it, and you know, we don't really know a lot about DeMarcus Ayers right now, but he did enough to get himself promoted and some playing time late in the season. So maybe you spend a 6th-round draft pick on a wide receiver, and who knows what happens with Marcus Wheaton here during the offseason as well, too. So I just, unless you got extreme value in that first 4 rounds and somebody that you think that you might be able to get on the field during his rookie season, I see no reason spending that early of a pick on a wide receiver.
Yep. Okay, so anything else Kevin said of note? Let's
Ladarius Green.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't understand.
I don't understand
people's reason why people don't want Ladarius Green back. I mean, okay, so you save some cap money. But I don't get it. The guy is, as he said and as I've said all season, when he was on the field, he was exactly the guy they thought they were getting. So what's the rush to dump Ladarius Green?
I don't think, David, it's so much people don't want him. That's the case for me. It's not that I don't want a healthy Ladarius Green. I'm scared as hell. I'm scared of hell that he's going to be able to make it through a season moving forward because of this concussion thing. Now, obviously, I don't know a lot about concussions and whether or not he's more susceptible to having them now as opposed to anybody else on the roster. I'm just, because of what's happened to him before he got to Pittsburgh and what has happened last. Look, you couldn't ask for, Kevin Cole was right. Yeah, we got exactly what we thought we were getting out of Ladarius Green, but that was only in 6 games. I'm just scared to death of his health-wise. I'm not scared of Ladarius Green, the player, as much as I am his health. And I think most people listening, that's their kind of viewpoint with him. But I mean, I think Kevin Colbert made it pretty clear he's not going anywhere, right? So no sense probably us
no point wasting time on it. So I was, you know, look, I was a huge fan of the signing. One of the things I said all season was I thought those guys would both be, he and Bud Dupree would be hugely impactful when they came back. Obviously, Green wasn't when it mattered down the stretch in the playoffs. So we'll see where that goes. My Chickalo little birdie story wasn't right, so he re-signed his exclusive rights, and so it's just down to really Villanueva, right? That's and they're trying to get a long-term deal done with him. Is, well, I don't even know what to think about a deal with Villanueva with the, you know, having him under control for nothing right now. Is 4 years and what's the right number? $12 to $15 million. Is that a deal that Villanueva should sign up for?
Well, I and a lot of the, you know, we already talked previously about this in several podcasts about maybe that's a guy that, even though the Steelers don't normally do with exclusive rights free agents, maybe Villanueva is a guy to do that. And then lo and behold, this past week, I think Ed Bouchette wrote about that as well. Here's the thing, and it's not only Villanueva we're waiting to sign an exclusive rights free agent tender. B.J. Finney is the other one that we're waiting to find something out as well about. Here's what I wrote about Villanueva, and this is what I feel could quite possibly happen with him. If you could get him, and it would make sense, if you could get him at about $5 million, David, average yearly value, that would be good for both sides, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, I think you can get him cheaper for that, since you get him, you know, you're going to get him, you get him cheap for the next 2 years anyway, right?
Well, here's what I wrote. Would Villanueva entertain a 3-year, $15 million deal and one that would likely put around $6 million in his pocket when he signs, and roughly $10.5 million after you know, first two seasons being 2017, 2018. Remember, as things stand right now, you know, he's going to play for, you know, what, less than $700,000 this year. And if he was to get the, let's say, a high restricted tender next year, let's call it 3.5 million. So, you know, he stands probably at most to make around, what, $4 million at most over the course of the next two seasons. And if you gave him 10 after the first two seasons now, I mean, it would be in his best interest to sign. And it would be, in my opinion, probably the in the Steelers as well, too. Because here's one thing that I think gets lost with Villanueva. And yes, I'm full aware, people, I know how exclusive rights free agents tenders work. And yeah, the Steelers should just let him, you know, let him play out for the minimum. Don't do anything when they don't have to when it comes to Villanueva. I get that. But we're talking about a guy here who could up and quit football tomorrow and probably not have an issue with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a nice story. I don't think it's, you know, this guy's not quitting anything.
Right. Well, I mean, he's definitely not going to quit this year, regardless of what happens. But what after, well, you know, after this next year, you know, and let's say he's considered at that time a top 10 left tackle, you know?
Here's my bet. Ali Villanueva is playing football 6 years from now.
Wow, that's a long time.
He's 26, 27 years old. He's a guy who's obviously, he knows all about commitment. He can make, you know, look, he can still study and do things with his life when he, you know, in the off season. There is plenty of time in the off season. And, you know, he's a member of the community. He's married. He's got a family. And he can make a ton of dough.
Yeah, he can. But, you know, he's not going, unless the Steelers give him a deal now, he's not going to make a, unless they were to relook at his contract situation, you know, in other words, next, let him ride out his exclusive rights tender this year. Next year, you tender him, probably going to have to put a second round tender on him, right? Next year, in order to retain him. And then after you get him to sign that tender, then you work out a long term deal with him. But how much is his price tag going to go up? You know, between
well,
now.
Well, I like your numbers on, but I would have said four and 15 and rather than 3 and 15, because what's he going to make this year if he plays exclusive rights? What is that? Is it a million?
Oh, this year? No, not even that. I mean, 600 something thousand.
Yeah. So the next 2 years, he's only going to make, you know, whatever he makes, a million something. And so if you do 4 years at 12 to 15, that's paying him in the out years, kind of, you know, $6 or $7 million a year. So I don't know, 4 year, $15 million seems like you know, $12 to $15 million, and give him half of that up front. Well, that seems like a good deal to me.
Well, like I said, he stands right now on the pace that he's going to earn roughly $4 million over the course of the next 2 years. So, you know, that's what he's up against. As far as earning now, 3 year, $15 million, that would be enticing for both sides. And remember, if he signed such a deal and let's say you could get him to a cap charge, very comparable to what you're already paying Ryan Harris this year. So, you know, his salary cap charge, you could give Villanueva $6 million in 2017, and if $5 million of that was a signing bonus, his cap charge in 2017 would be almost $2.7 million. Well, you've got Ryan Harris set to count $1.9 million against the cap. So you're not hurting yourself a lot cap wise to sign Villanueva to a, let's say, a 3 year, $15 million deal. Not only is it good for Villanueva, but in 3 years he becomes a free agent again, and he gets one last shot to cash in on a contract on top. All right, but plain and simple, will Villanueva get a new deal between now and the start of the regular season?
Yeah, I think he will. I think he'll get that done.
I think he will too, and I hope he does. If there's anybody that you kind of root for to get paid, that's the guy. But maybe the Steelers, Ed Bouchette sure did kind of sell that it, you know, is probably potentially going to happen in his story this past week.
Okay, Dave, you want to get to Joel, or we got anything else we want to hit on big picture?
No, I think that's got it. We covered some fingers. We covered some free agents. We covered Colbert. We covered pretty much all of it. So that'll leave me and Alex, if you're not around on Friday, Alex and I maybe talk a little bit more draft prospects. So, yeah, take us to Joel Corey here of CBS Sports.
All right, and first, a Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane at First Advantage Mortgage. A lifelong Steeler fan, a Pittsburgh native, Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out podcast listeners. You can call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. All right, without further ado, here's Dave and Joel Corey.
Okay, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. On this Monday, I'm pleased to be joined by one of my favorite guys to talk salary cap with, especially concerning the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's been on the show before, and we're happy to have him back again on this Monday. I am, of course, talking about Joel Corey, former NFL agent. You can read his work on CBSSports.com. You can also follow Joel on Twitter at Corey. Joel, Corey, or Joel, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Joel, you wrote quite an extensive article over the weekend about Le'Veon Bell and what awaits him here during the early portions of free agency, particularly in front of the start of the new league year. The Steelers are more than likely going to place the franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell by March 1st. It would probably be a surprise if they didn't. The only way that wouldn't happen, I suppose, is if they worked out a long-term deal. In the meantime, when you wrote about Le'Veon Bell, you wrote about kind of the pros and cons of both sides there. And I think what stuck out the most is how you wrote about, you know, the franchise tag really might be beneficial for Le'Veon and maybe eventually playing underneath the tag for the 2017 season. You want to kind of explain a little bit of the reasoning behind that?
Sure. For most players, a franchise tag is kind of a curse because they want to get a long-term deal at their market value, and it's basically a one-year high-priced prove-it contract year where you have to incur the risk of poor performance and injury. The problem with Bell and why the franchise tag may actually benefit him is the running back market has been declining over time. Right now you have Adrian Peterson, who's the highest paid running back, and that's not going to be for much longer. By the new league year, he won't be. He's scheduled to make $18 million for 2017 season. Contract average is about $14 million. They're not paying him that. They're going to rework the deal or cut him, and he's going to take a huge pay cut if he's going to be a Viking. Number two by average salary is Jamaal Charles. He's probably going to get cut to persistent knee problems, and Spencer Ware has more or less replaced him. So that leaves LeSean McCoy at $8 million per year as the top of the market. So if you're a guy with a franchise tag at about $12 to $12.5 million, that's kind of your friend now because the running back market doesn't help you. And the last time we had a running back coming off a great year and he hit the open market, he didn't capitalize on it the way he probably should have at any other position, and that was DeMarco Murray after being the NFL's Offensive Player of the Year in 2014. He got a deal averaging $8 million per year. So if Le'Veon Bell is going to try to get up there in that range, which is where running backs had been 5-6 years ago, $14 million, Adrian Peterson, $13 million for Chris Johnson, $13.5 million for Chris Johnson, even Marshawn Lynch had signed a two-year extension for $12 million per year, then he retired after the 2015 season. This is going to be a hard negotiation because the Steelers, as much as they value Le'Veon Bell, nobody really likes to pay more than their positional market.
And when you look at Le'Veon Bell, when and if the Steelers franchise him, he's going to run right upstairs and sign that. There's not going to be any hee-hawing around with him because of everything that you just stated, right? He's going to run up and sign that tender right away.
Yeah, most likely. I'd be surprised if he didn't sign it because it's fully guaranteed once you sign it. Franchise tags are rarely revoked. We saw last year with Josh Norman that the Carolina Panthers pulled his. That's maybe like the fourth time in the past 15 years or so that's happened. What if he signs it, then he's obligated to show up for anything mandatory. If he doesn't sign it, then he can do like Von Miller, Muhammad Wilkerson did last year, and you see him when you see him. That he doesn't have to show up for a mandatory minicamp in June. But the Steelers have a history of playing hardball with guys that don't show up contractually when they don't have to. Remember Mike Wallace a few years ago when he was a restricted free agent?
Right.
He didn't sign his tender until well into training camp. They never got a deal done, and they gave the money to Antonio Brown, which caused the problem, current problem that he has. So you have to also look at the history of how a team deals when a player uses the tools at his disposal, and the agent's got to factor that in the equation in terms of determining what's the best move to get Le'Veon Bell a long-term deal.
Now, once they do put the franchise tag on him, and if they were to let him play out the year underneath the franchise tag and decided to franchise tag him again after the 2017 season, that would be a 20% increase over the tag amount from this year. So essentially you're talking about another franchise tag in 2018 of roughly around $14 million or so. So essentially by tagging Bell this year, they're saying that in their mind, he might be worth 27, $28 million over the course of the next 2 years, right?
Right. It's going to be about 14.5 to 14.8, depending upon where the cap is set. And what agents do when they know the tag is a strong possibility, they take the average of two franchise tags and factor that in the equation in terms of what the guaranteed money should be and also what the average of the deal should be. He can't really do that in Bell's case because, one, that's 13.5 per year if you take the two franchise tags. There's no running back making that, and there won't be anyone to help him. And two, the Steelers don't structure contracts the way most teams do. They don't guarantee base salaries. They have roster bonuses, early roster bonuses, third, fifth day, and second and third years for the big contracts to try to substitute as guarantees. So his guaranteed money is not going to be what it would be for most other teams. So that whole analysis is going to be a tough sell to the Steelers if Bell's agent tries to advance it.
I went back after you wrote your article and looked at the last two running backs who were franchised in the NFL, and both of them happened in 2012, being Matt Forte and Ray Rice. And boy, you look at the two different contracts there, what a difference it was. I think if my numbers are right, Matt Forte at signing in the first year had a cash flow. He came away from the signing table with $9.8 million in 2012, whereas Ray Rice came away from the table with it looks like $17 million, which was, I think, the franchise tag that year was something like 7.74, something around those lines. Why was there such a discrepancy with what Forte walked away from the table with in year one as opposed to what Ray Rice walked away from the table with?
I think at the time, Rice was considered the better running back. Forte was in the mold of a Le'Veon Bell, more of your dual threat complete running backs. He also had an injury history. Interestingly enough, I believe that Forte has the same agent as Bell, Adisa.
He does.
And what the Ravens did was they front-loaded that deal because on paper the average, I think, was $7 million a year for Rice, but it was like $30 or $31 million after the first 3 years and like $24.5 million after two. They weren't counting on him having the domestic issue and him starting to decline pretty quickly, so it ended up backfiring on them. But you also had that same offseason, I think Arian Foster's a restricted free agent, signed a deal for like $8.7 million a year. And Marshawn Lynch got his first big deal from Seattle, right about the same neighborhood as Forte signed. So Forte's deal is consistent with the marketplace. Rice's was a little aggressive. Great cash flow. They'd done that previously with Haloti Ngah, so there was a precedent for them doing that. But you're right. Those are two different approaches. But I don't see the Ray Rice approach being anything remotely possible for Bell, just because of the durability concerns and the off-the-field issue as well.
Now, his agent initially talking about Bell's will probably push for upwards 20 million or so in first year cash flow at signing. I would think if you're representing Bell, what are you pushing for, and what would you probably settle for in the lines of first year money? And then on top of that, cash flow, you know, what would you expect him to come away with after the first 2 years, and perhaps even after the first 3 years of a new deal?
Well, ideally, you want the deal to be as front-loaded as possible. So, yeah, you're right. That $20 million neighborhood would be what you would want to get. But you also have to take the team's structure in mind, because you're not going to reinvent the wheel structurally. So you're going to get a deal, which I'll use David DeCastro as a guy. He had $16 million treated as signing bonus on his deal. And through the first new year, his cash was at 17.8, and his deal was fairly front-loaded. So through 2 years, you'd really want to be at about that $27, $28 million mark. You're not going to get there with Bell. The Steelers are probably going to want to backload the deal more so than they would with other deals, because the money, they may not have as much of a problem with once they agree upon overall compensation. It's going to be the structure of the deal, because he's a risk. One more problem with the NFL substance abuse policy: it's a 4-game suspension. And that's why he kind of loses some leverage in terms of how the deal is going to get structured.
Could you see Bell walking away with, say, roughly $18 million with when you talk signing bonus and first-year base salary, and potentially even as much as $30 million after the first 2 years of his deal?
$30 million is high. That's not going to happen given his issues. But given that David DeCastro was at 17.8 through the first new year on an extension averaging $10 million per year, that's not unreasonable to be at 18. The problem is they're going to want to backload it, because as much as Kevin Colbert says they have an issue with him, his ability, durability, and his growth as a person, the negotiator, Omar Khan, his offers are probably going to reflect that, because it's his job to protect the team. And anytime there's a character issue with a person, it usually affects you not only potentially financially, but also structurally.
Would you say $18 million walking away after signing would be the ceiling?
Yeah, they're not going to deviate really from their overall structure. Maybe 18, 5, 19 would be the ceiling, but they're not going to reinvent the wheel for anybody. They don't even reinvent the wheel for Ben Roethlisberger, because he has 34, I think, 0.25 fully guaranteed in a quarterback deal. And there's over $60 million in overall guarantees, but the bulk of it is injury guarantees. So Bell's not going to get the type of structure he would get if he played for some other team. That's just how the Steelers do business. The Bengals are the same way. The Packers are largely the same way, with the exception of Aaron Rodgers. So if he's going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler, he's going to have to play ball structurally.
All right, let's say he got $18 million at signing. Obviously, the Steelers like to use those options / roster bonuses in the second year, and sometimes in the third year as well too. How much could you see Bell putting in his pocket by March of the fifth year, fifth day of the 2018 league year? Could you see something along the neighborhoods of around $26 million come that time, or is that still too high?
Well, that's a little high for a couple of reasons. One, all signing bonuses that are significant have deferrals. I don't know exactly how much Pittsburgh would defer, but there's going to be some which we deferred into the 2018 season. I don't know if it's going to be paid March, April, or May. That's something that's negotiable. And I would be hesitant to give him the roster bonus. I would put it in base salary, and that's where his issues come into play. If he wasn't in the drug program, then you'd be more likely to put it in a roster bonus. But in the event something should happen, you'd rather have it in base salary than in a roster bonus if you're the team. So this is where this deal gets harder, because you're going to have the additional layer of the team wanting to protect themselves structurally, because they don't have the same trust. Even though Kevin Colbert tried to say there's no issue, I find that hard to believe. I'm not doubting his sincerity, but teams always try to protect themselves in situations where there's a potential issue looming.
Do you remember the last time a player was franchised and then signed a new deal and his average yearly value was less than the tag amount?
Yeah, it happens with kickers a lot. just because their tag is so high. And that's why you don't tag certain positions. Like, you don't have – if it – Dont'a Hightower gets franchised, it will happen with him, because his franchise tag is going to be upward to $15 million. And that's not the market for an inside linebacker. I'm still going to call Jamie Collins an outside linebacker. The highest paid inside linebacker is Luke Kuechly at 12-3. He's not going to advance the ball that much. So you would see it in that situation. It normally doesn't work out that way, but running back's an anomaly. If you franchise a guard or a center, the same thing would occur. That's why you typically don't franchise them, because the offensive line numbers almost exclusively composed of left tackle salaries, which are much higher than anybody else. But it's not the normal situation to have a tag which is going to be higher than the actual overall average.
So you would be surprised if Bell's, assuming he signs a new long-term deal, you'd be surprised if his yearly average was more than the franchise tag. In fact, you're probably expecting it to come in around what, 11.5 million?
Well, if he can get anything in double digits, then that gets into the acceptable range, because you're not going to have any $10 million per year running backs when the bulk of those negotiations take place. Because even if they got something done before the franchise tag deadline on March 1st, the Steelers are going to throw out the two highest deals, Jamaal Charles and Adrian Peterson, because they're going to be disappearing deals. So that's where you got a big issue there. What I would try to do from the agent standpoint is expand the universe of what we're talking about in negotiation by saying that he's performed at such a high level that he has transcended his position. And because of his running ability and his ability to catch the ball, that he should be compared to the highest paid offensive playmakers, not just running backs. And coincidentally, those guys happen to be wide receivers. The top of the wide receiver market is like 14, 15 million per year. The second tier is like 11 to 13. So if I could get him somewhere in the second tier, even if it's the bottom of the second tier at 11 million per year, I'd probably call it a day, particularly if I could get a decent structure and not totally be penalized for the self-inflicted wounds Bell has presented for himself.
Do you expect this to run right up to the July 15 deadline? It seems like most of them do. I know Ray Rice and Matt Forte did back in 2012. Do you expect after the tag to be given for negotiations to take that long?
Now, for some reason, the NFL is a deadline-driven league and nothing gets done early. I don't think Bell's going to be any different. That it'll probably push close to the July 15 deadline, probably in that last week. if he signs a long-term deal, that's when it'll get done.
Well, okay, moving on to Antonio Brown real quick. Obviously, he wants to be the league's highest-paid receiver. Kevin Colbert said a few days ago, you know, they escalated talks with him. We would probably expect something to be done, I would think, by the time the draft rolls around. You want to frame up a deal real quick for us for Antonio Brown, what we should maybe expect for him?
Yeah, he's got a legitimate case to be highest paid receiver. He's been the most productive guy over the past 4 years. Then Steelers shouldn't have a problem making the highest paid wide receiver. His cap number is 13.6 and some change, but almost 9 million of that is bonus proration. So you're not going to get any real cap relief this year out of him. His deal is probably going to be structured more like A.J. Green's, because those top receivers in the $14, $15 million range, they have like $45 million in overall guarantees, with over 30 fully guaranteed at signing. Green had a $15 million signing bonus, and then he had a high base salary of 11.175. So wasn't formally guaranteed, but it was the first year base he was going to earn it anyway. So you're probably going to see, I would say, Antonio Brown, even if they don't touch his $4.7 million base salary and leave it as is, he's going to be in the mid-20s in terms of what we call guaranteed money. Then he's going to have the significant roster bonuses in year two and year three, where at least half of his overall compensation is going to be in a third or fifth day roster bonus in each of those 2 years. It's not going to be formally called guaranteed money, but that's what the Steelers structure their deals.
What would you expect a signing bonus for him to be this time around?
Scott, I think it's going to hit at least 20. I don't think it goes above 25.
Okay, good deal, good deal. This your favorite time of year, Joel, or is it year-round your favorite time of year in the NFL?
This is my busiest season. Once the fantasy football starts to dominate the conversation, then I'm not as busy. But as the season comes to an end and the business stuff starts to move to the forefront, then I become a busier person.
I hear you. Well, who are you going to be writing? Do you know who you're going to be writing about next as far as contracts go?
Yeah, I'm doing something on teams with the best and worst salary cap situations for CBS this week. And it's going to be a little bit different than what you see out there in the general public or the marketplace, because cap room right now doesn't factor in tenders for restricted guys, doesn't factor in incentives earned. So that will count towards the cap. Any incentives earned in 2016, there's going to be an adjustment, and it's going to deduct from cap room. You got to tender free agents, restricted free agents, if you want to keep them, like Malcolm Butler. That's almost $4 million if you give him a first-round tender that's going to come off the cap for the Patriots. So when you factor in things like that, some of the projections of the cap room aren't necessarily as accurate as they could be. So I'm going to try to be a little more accurate than what's out there.
Well, we'll definitely be looking forward to that and reading your work online at cbssports.com. Folks, you can follow Joel Corey on Twitter at Corey Joel. Joel, you know me, I could keep you on the line for 3 hours talking math like this. It's one of my favorite things to do. I appreciate you short notice sitting in today on a terrible podcast with me.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Okay, good stuff, Dave. Always interesting to hear what Joel has to say. And, hey, also, let's just remind our listeners, you know, the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger.
Or doing cap math, right.
Particularly when you don't get any guidance. So let our buddy Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams. Where are we going to open the season next year?
Won't be New England. How about Baltimore?
All right, even in Baltimore. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. All right, Dave, good stuff. So, yeah, that'll kind of wrap us up.
Yeah, and folks, make sure you email me and let me know if you remember any of those players that missed first two years of their career and only to return afterwards. I'd like to compile some sort of list and having a hard time doing that. You can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter, at David M. Todd. You can listen to David M. Todd on ESPN 970 radio as well, too, daily in the afternoon. What are you talking about these days, David?
Yeah, you know, we'll be getting into the combine coming up, obviously, and you know, the Pens going into the trade deadline and spring training in Bradenton, ready to roll.
Absolutely. Follow David on Twitter, as I said, at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we talk about, want to support the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button in the upper right navigational bar. That'll take you securely to PayPal. And David, appreciate your time on this Monday.
As always, happy President's Day. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.